I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***?
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello and welcome to the Guitar Nerds Podcast. I'm your host, Mark Packham, joined this evening by Jay Cross.
Hello.
And Joe Branton.
Bonjour.
Sorry, I forgot to put my headphones on.
That's a problem. That's going to be a problem for doing a podcast.
I'm here.
Primarily, where do you work?
I work for Guitar Nerds.
Yeah, okay, good. Good to know. How's it going, chaps?
Very good, thanks.
Hooray.
We're Matt Nightless.
Ixnay on the at night, mate.
I don't know what he's doing. Something.
His parents are around.
Yeah. Okay. I mean, they could come on the podcast.
He doesn't have three mics. He's only got one.
Gather round,
and let me tell you about the time that I accidentally found a new feature for my ES8.
Worth mentioning that we're podcasting at Jay's house today because we're doing our first ever live stream straight after we record this.
Gonna see if it works.
Yeah, we're doing a test this evening. So, for podcast listeners who aren't in the Facebook group or for those of you who haven't been following, we're going to start live streaming the podcast, like a video of us doing the podcast. We've hooked up with the guys at Amply.fi.
For Finland.
Indeed. Yeah, maybe that is the Finnish domain.
It's got to be.
Yeah,
of course
it might be.
I mean, what is BE? Belgium. And that's what YouTube have.
Oh, yeah, they have U-T-U.BE. So now you're going to be able to watch us. We think it's going to be Tuesday nights at like 8:30.
Prime time.
Indeed. As we record the podcast, the audio version, we're going to be streaming it live to the internet, amply.fi/guitar nerds, and you can watch us
every country.
The audio version will continue as normal, so you'll be able to get this every week from iTunes or wherever you get it. And Patreon's going to continue as normal. If you're a Patreon backer, then you'll get your extra 30 minutes. We might even record that video
bonus
and put that on Patreon, so you can watch it. Haven't decided yet because we can record everything we're doing on the stream. So.
Additional bonus,
indeed.
So cost free.
The good thing about Amplify is that you can chat to us. So as well as taking questions from the Facebook group, as always, we're going to be taking live chat.
I thought you said we were going to ignore anyone commenting.
No. That's the whole point, isn't it?
I mean, we've been trying to do that to you for the last 3 years.
Ignore your comments all the time. And also that video, I think, is going to go up on YouTube as well. So we're going to... Tonight is a test, which is why we're not recording the podcast live, because we want to make sure that people who listen to us audio-wise still get the normal podcast. And hopefully that will be the case when we actually do the streams as
well. It's a bit of an unknown.
Brave new world.
Don't cross the streams.
Indeed. This should be fun and weird, I think. But we're doing this after. Anyway.
Yeah, anyway, don't talk about that now.
No. How's everyone's week been? Jay Cross, what have you been up to?
I went away. I went on a stag do.
Okay, good.
I went to Dublin on a stag do.
Funny thing about Dublin, it's actually the world's largest city. Do you know why?
Why?
Because it keeps Dublin.
See, I told that joke a couple of times because you've been incessantly nattering it to me since I announced that I was going to Dublin. And I actually changed it and said that I was this great Joe.
I like Joe's doing live sound effects now. He hasn't actually poured a drink. He's just like that guy from Police Academy who can make the noises with his mouth. You know that now with this is video, or will be video, people will be able to see you doing that. You can't just try and do it sneakily.
And every time
anymore.
You sort of like lean away to try and take a chomp of a biscuit, people will be able to see it.
Well,
but you're drinking Iron Brew now.
You can't get away with anything anymore. You can't do your stupid faces that you pull.
I know.
Dreadful.
No giving you love bites whilst you're podcasting.
Yeah, that
trying
is
to
always
break your concentration.
That, always a problem. So, Jay, you were saying
in all seriousness, I went to the best thing that I did while we were there was and you're gonna roll your eyes, but we did a tour of the Guinness Factory, a Guinness brewery, of course.
Tourists.
Yeah, absolutely. And
Stags on tour.
Initially, I was like, this is €20. It's quite a lot of money just to this tour of this brewery. And I'm not sure it's going to be that good. And actually, it was wicked. They did a little segment on cooperage. Do you know what coopers are?
People who make the barrels.
They are the people that make the barrels, the casks. And I watched this documentary on coopers in the late 1700s. And it's mad. It's absolutely mad, like measuring the angles, like with a very basic compass, and then the rest was just sort of intuition. And yeah, it was absolutely incredible. And then we got to the tour was like, you walk around yourself and it was maybe like 2 hours long, and you get to the top and there's a bar on the seventh story, and included with your entrance is a free pint of Guinness, and you can look out over it's a panoramic view of the city. So
how do we get this back to guitars?
Tell
you what,
that's what I did this week.
How about when we used to work in a guitar shop, PV sent us a barrel with one of their guitars, didn't they, as part of the display?
Yeah.
It was an actual PV were hooked up with Jack Daniels for a while, weren't they? And it was an actual Jack Daniels barrel.
Yes.
That then was part of the display.
Yeah,
for
it was really
PV
weird.
Guitars.
And we ended up it was actually just before I worked at the shop, but we ended up giving it to the pub over the road, and that kind of became our
That was the leaning post. The PV
post.
Jack Daniels barrel.
Yeah.
Probably my favourite thing PV have ever made.
I
thought you really liked that amp.
I'm only joking.
AT200.
The AT200 auto-tune guitar. That is the best thing PV have ever made.
Yeah.
And I actually... I don't believe that.
No.
Joe Branson, how's your week?
Yeah, it was okay.
Have you done any gigs this week? It seems to be the running theme for the last few weeks is that you've been gigging it up.
No, I've a little bit of time off, but it is both The Fringe and The Great Escape down here in Brighton at the moment.
Okay.
So I have been going to see a lot of shows and checking out the cool equipment at said shows.
What have you seen? Firstly, who did you see and what were they using?
So I went to see the last ever Funeral for a Friend show. They played one of their albums, Hours, from start to finish. And it was very good. They had their original, because that band have been through a lot of band members. So they even for like their last song, they had the original guitarist come on and the original drummer came on and sung his parts and stuff. So that was cool. But
I forgot the drummer was the backing vocalist.
Yeah,
isn't he?
Yeah,
because
exactly.
My friend Casey plays drums for him now.
Oh right, yeah.
Until they broke up.
Yeah.
I forgot because he had the Madonna mic.
Did he really?
Yeah, he used to use the Madonna mic.
I was so happy when he left because he used to wear. He was one of those drummers that wore protective gloves. And
I love a good drum glove.
Tico
Torres from Bon Jovi, the originator of the drum glove. That's probably not true.
No.
But
awful.
I love a drum glove.
Awful. Anyway, the interesting thing with that band is that their bass player actually became their guitarist after their guitarist left. And they got an additional bass player. Their bass player, I think, is probably the most interesting. The new bass player.
Was that the dude that we met at that rock festival?
Him. That's
couple
right.
Years ago.
So a couple of years ago, you and me went down to a Breakout Festival in Brighton to interview all the bands. And the only reason I'd signed up to it was because Funeral for a Friend were there, and I had the potential to interview the bass player, who I think is great.
Yes.
And I had a gig, and I had to go, and so you got to do the interview.
But
yes, we've spoken about this. Yeah, you ended up not being there.
Yeah, exactly. I left you to pack up all on your own and get a taxi all the way back from the
Yeah, thanks, mate.
But what was you actually got to learn some really interesting stuff from him on that, because he has a Warwick endorsement and he has his own custom shop, Warwick, which is quite interesting. It's it was half ash and half mahogany, and then it had a line of purple heart that ran through. Do you remember any of this?
Yes.
I mean, because he told
I remember he was talking a lot about the Warwick factory.
That's right.
I don't remember a lot about his base, okay, I've got to admit.
He had a very interesting base, because the front of it is ash, more than a top, like the front half is ash, and that's for the attack. And then it's a mahogany back, and then running through it is... what is it called? I said it a second.
Purple Heart.
Yeah.
You forgot halfway through talking about it.
It's a really unique. It's a streamer and a five string, and just a really interesting, unique looking bass. And yeah, he spoke a lot about in that interview. Spoke a lot to you about the way the Warwick factory works, because it's completely.
It's like carbon neutral, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, it's self sustaining. Yes. So they have giant fans in the ceiling, which
going Warwick.
We love Warwick so much. Yeah.
And that just keeps the morale so high. But they have fans in the ceiling that push all the sawdust and all the offcuts from the building down into these funnels that run through the floor, which power a furnace in the basement, which then supplies electricity to the entire building. So
it's pretty ingenious.
Yeah, amazing. Sort of an incredible sort of proper like German ingenuity style sort of thing.
Indeed.
So I think from him we learned loads of cool stuff. But yes, back to equipment. I've actually seen quite a few like hardcore and metal shows this week and have been really surprised with the setup.
Okay, so what are people using? When I think metal, I think like ESP Les Paul and 5150 or Boogie. What people have been using?
So Black Stars for A Funeral for a Friend.
Okay.
Not incredibly unusual. Probably
because they're a British band.
Yeah, exactly. I can't tell what Black Star, because all their Black Stars, they don't put anything on them.
Pretty similar.
They look the same. So from a distance, you can't tell. We're all playing Black Star, except for obviously the bass player who plays the Jonas Hellborg Warwick stuff. But one guitarist, quite traditionally, was switching between two ESP Eclipses.
Yeah.
Very standard. The other guitarist, whole thing, one guitar. Like, he just, bear in mind they're a big band, he could have changed guitars, he didn't.
Why would you need to?
Well, you know, people do, don't they?
But I guess.
Anyway, whole thing, American Deluxe Strat.
Okay.
Three single coil.
Really?
Yeah. Whole thing.
What?
For that, like, loads of finger tapping, loads of, like, big chunky riffs.
Those are like
a relatively drop-tuned.
I wonder
guitar.
If they're different pickups in there, because
maybe. I mean, it was at a distance.
How did you know it was deluxe?
Because it was a flame top.
Did deluxes have? Was it one of those maybe those special ones? Like
how flamey was it?
Not that flamey. Quite subtle, sort of a flamed red to brown burst sort of thing. Not.
Well, it might be one of those selects.
Maybe,
did it have
the
binding?
Selects didn't have...
It was too far away to see binding.
Which band was this, sorry?
Funeral for a Friend.
Oh, okay. Sorry, I thought you'd moved on to something else. Don't know.
Don't think so.
Unless it was... I doubt it would be a... were they that drop-tuned?
I mean, maybe not. I mean, it's a five-string bass with a low B, so potentially. But
it's just for look, though. Yeah. Don't actually use that, do they?
Probably not. I wouldn't.
No need.
But there. And then also down in Brighton at the Great Escape, I went to see the Holy Roar show that was on in town. Holy Roar, a great little label who sign only really cool bands.
Wasn't there a band called Holy Roar?
No, you're thinking of the song Holy Diver by Ronnie James Dio.
Oh, yeah, that was it. Yeah, I was thinking, 100%. I'm constantly thinking of Dio. Maybe I was thinking of Holy Mountain. That was a band, right?
There's a band called The Holy Mountain, who are a hardcore band from Florida, and there's a band called Holy Mountain, I think are an indie band from Glasgow.
Okay. Oh, what I want is a band that's Holy, comma, Mountain, exclamation mark. That would be the best combination that we could go for.
Okay, right. I'll see what I can do. I'll see if I can drum up some interest.
Good. into it. Anyway, Holy Raw.
Right. So anyway, so I went to see that, and I saw Rolo Tomassi play, who are an excellent sort of hardcore math band, and they their guitarist played flick between. He's more known, and he's more commonly used a one of the new double humbucking tellies, the American standard.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
Double. I think they're American standard.
I think he just had a black top.
Was it black top?
They look
maybe
quite similar.
It was a black top.
I always thought about those black top guitars.
I'm sure it's a black top. I don't think it's an American.
Those black top guitars.
Actually, you're probably right.
I always thought that they looked like American standards because they had American standard logo on the top.
Yeah, yeah.
And they were not like a vintage lacquer neck.
Yeah.
They were like a clear, you know, like satin, like you'd expect on a on a standard. So
the other cool thing about the black tops is the control plate is flipped, so it makes it easier. So directly beneath the strings is the volume control as opposed to the pickup selector.
Right.
So it makes it easier for you to do volume swells and stuff.
Oh, that's quite nice. Yeah. That's a nice little touch that's actually really well thought out.
It is.
But quite costly to change the plate in that sense.
No, not really, because they flip the plate around and they just wire it's wired as volume tone pickup selector as opposed to pickup selector volume tone.
And they then put a couple of Fender amp knobs on there, which super cool.
Okay, yeah, cool. Well, he played that for the bulk, but for the opener and for all the new stuff, he was playing just a standard Tele.
Okay.
And again, just sort of seeing like a completely single coil Telecaster, and it was like a maple neck, just a black Tele maple neck.
It's a classic metal guitar.
Yeah, exactly. It was just really unusual for such heavy stuff, and they are quite drop tuned as well. So yeah, it was random instruments for that
definitely. So metal's changing. What were people using amp wise?
So again, Blackstar for Rolo Tomassi.
Oh really? Again? Okay.
Yeah, and the bass is like a Orange Cabs, but. Some, like one of those.
He's got like a big Ashdown head or something, doesn't he?
No, he's got one of those Ampeg PF heads.
Oh yeah, he does. He does, because I had a go at him for that when we saw them do that in-store at Resident.
Yeah, yeah.
Joe, just before I finished working at the shop that I was working at, we sort of helped them out, put together a PA for an in-store at a records independent record store around the corner from where we worked at the time, and he had that, and I was just like, "What is wrong with you? What is wrong with you?"
You were like, they tour for like 6 months of a year, and you're doing it with
a Portaflex,
the most breaky amp we have ever sold at the guitar shop.
I know, absolutely ridiculous.
Yeah,
absolutely ridiculous.
So this week I've been I spent the last 2 days listening to Beatles solo records.
I saw your tweet about that.
Yeah, in fact, probably people have probably sent me some abuse that I've not yet read.
But I don't think people care that much.
No,
about
people love the Beatles.
Spent
a day, a couple of days listening to a load of Beatles records, and I just want to point out how good a guitarist Paul McCartney is. Everyone says George Harrison amazing, and I can't dispute that. Mm-hmm. His work in the Beatles, bloody brilliant. But check out a couple of McCartney solo records if you want some proper rocking guitars. Like the first two, McCartney and Ram, have got some of the best guitar playing I think I've ever heard. He is awesome, and loads of it is just guitar straight into the desk. Turn it up.
To the desk. Were they using like Neve desks or anything like that?
Yeah. So I forget the story. I think he basically, there was an old four-track machine at Abbey Road that he took from there when they were getting rid of it and upgrading to like 8 tracks. He took one home, and loads of it is just like, I'll just plug my guitar straight in, and I assume there's like Valve Pre or something in there. And it just sounds wicked. It's like that Abbey Road, and like from White Album onwards, I guess, like Fuzz Sound is so good because it is literally just like a Les Paul or a Tele plugged straight into the desk, and it sounds awesome. Definitely worth checking out. Check out McCartney. That is a rocking record.
It's so weird, isn't it, that like that happened and like died away.
What, just plugging straight into the desk?
Yeah.
I guess probably the quality or the style of desks went a different way.
Yeah.
So you were less like Valve Prez, and I guess when you were going into the 80s, you were going into like, or 70s and 80s, you were going into like clean studio preamps.
And I guess there's also, you know, the technology became more people got into it, and the technology became more affordable, and more people started opening up smaller studios.
Yeah, totally.
Which, you know, just rather than there just being like a handful of big studios with these, like, I mean, what does one of those desks cost you now? Like, I mean, obviously you can't get, but the equivalent, you pay like $200,000 or something like that.
Oh, for
the equivalent unit, yeah. Today's equivalent unit.
Yeah, yeah.
And I mean, you know, you just, it's so unattainable for pretty much everybody that it just, and it, I guess it's interesting to think about whether, which one drove that trend. You know, did the more affordable technology mean that more people were opening studios and therefore we moved away from big rigs to small rigs, or did more people get into it and therefore the technology became more widely available? And, you know, I don't know.
Yeah.
I'm just talking.
Yes. I think the... Yeah, I just think desks and what people wanted from studio stuff went in a very different direction. You went from obviously like tape delay, like warm sounding tape delays, to very accurate sounding clean digital delays. So yeah, no more plugging straight into the front end. So
there we go.
Big shame. So should we move on to news?
Nude.
Good. Excellent. One bit of news this week. Planet Waves have released the Ned Steinberger Micro Sound Hole Tuner.
Wow.
It's not big news this week. You can tell.
It's like really small news.
I mean, that,
it's really, like, it's very small.
That can't be the only thing
that's the only
happened.
Bit of news. Honestly, it's the only bit of news. There's been a couple of, like, weird boutique pedals that are out there, but not ones that I'd particularly heard of. So this is really the only thing that has kind of crossed my path this week in terms of news. Jay's actually got one in his hand.
I do. You know what? I didn't know that the NS stood for Ned Steinberger, because it doesn't say...
Maybe it
say
doesn't,
it
actually.
I'm sure it doesn't, because it doesn't say it anywhere on the
what
box.
What does NS stand for, then? Where have I got Ned Steinberger from?
No...
Noise.
Strings.
Oh, is that what it is?
No.
Oh. It doesn't say, does it?
It doesn't say. NS.
So,
maybe
I've just made that up, but it's called the NS... Micro Sound Hole Tuner. Noise sound. So, J. Cross, we've been sent one of these.
We have.
To have a look at.
We have.
You're holding it in your hand now.
I am.
The first thing is, it's very small.
Yes.
So it just clips onto the frame of the inside of your sound hole.
It does, yeah.
I mean, that's despite you saying that's small, that's still quite a bulky thing to clip to the inside of a sound
but
hole.
But this is quite good, actually, because I'll be able to able to show stuff off.
Jay's
when we're doing it.
Talking about the camera.
So there's a little sort of slot there, and it pops under there.
Flange.
Yeah, and the body of the body of the tuner, the main bulk of the tuner would be underneath the sound hole, so it wouldn't. It doesn't get too much in the way.
No.
You know, it's not too bad. But like,
it looks neat. I think it's
it does look neat. My main issue with it is there's no battery cover. The battery is just sort of slotted in, and that will be a complete nightmare if that falls out into your guitar.
Is there not supposed to be a battery cover on there?
I mean, there wasn't one in the box.
Yeah, weird. For me, this is a better solution than a headstock tuner.
It's certainly more subtle.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. I don't like headstock tuners because they're on a hinge, so you can see them. And if you move around at all, they flap around.
They do.
And the only one I could say that doesn't do that is the TC Electronic, which is a bit more sturdy.
Yes.
But yeah, a lot of them kind of flap around a bit. And this one just looks like it would slot in there. And you're not going to have any problems with that.
I think that's great.
I think that's, you know, a sensible way to, you know, have an alternative to something that is always going to get lost in your gig bag. I mean, it does seem a bit weird that the screen doesn't angle up. You're still going to be sort of looking very much into the body of your guitar at an angle.
Yeah, well, not necessarily, because you can adjust it so that it's directly...
I guess so. Yeah.
You just put
facing
it
up at you.
So I think this is a neat thing. Didario seem to, or Planet Waves, I should say, seem to be very keen on making this a big thing. So I think they realised that headstock tuners is like an overcrowded market.
Yeah.
This is a real neat solution. Really, yes. Really nice indeed. So, yeah.
And they're not very much money, are they?
I don't know, is the answer.
Wow, there we go.
Yeah, we...
I mean, we wouldn't have reviewed it if it had been cheap, would we?
Let's be honest.
We only review good stuff.
Yeah,
bear that in mind if you're thinking about sending us stuff. We only review good, expensive stuff.
Yeah, of course. Great.
No, yeah. I'm kidding. I actually don't know how much this is, but it's not going to be very much money. It's got all the features that you want. You can change the calibration on it, and it lights up really bright, and it's really accurate, and... Yeah, I mean, what else do you need, really?
You're going to give it a proper test and review up on the site
soon? I am,
soon?
Yes. I am, yes.
Cool.
Yes.
Into that.
Had I bought a Mel 9 last week?
Yes, you had. I'll tell you what I hadn't talked about.
What?
This isn't news. This is more what we've been up to. But my Count 5 turned up.
Yeah.
We didn't talk about it. We talked about it very briefly at the end of the...
How are you finding it?
It's absolutely incomprehensible.
Yeah.
So, first of all, it turned up and it doesn't come with a box. It came in a cardboard box and was wrapped in some bubble wrap. And that's it.
Just a plain cardboard box?
Just a plain cardboard box.
Okay.
That is the shipping box.
Yeah.
There's no Count 5 box.
No.
It's just... You get the pedal. Did you get a bit of piece of paper? I think there was a bit of piece of paper saying thanks very much, and I assume there's more instructions on the website. I need to go back and check, but I plugged it in and I was just like, I've absolutely no idea what's happening.
Yeah.
pretty much any pedal that you plug in, you can, if you're used to what guitar pedals do and if you've used them for a while, you can kind of just go, oh yeah, you know, tweak the delay a little bit, and even if the control's labelled differently, things usually are an equivalent of like delay time or feedback or modulation speed
and
or
level
gain.
And
exactly,
yeah,
even
yeah,
if
yeah.
they're called
if it's like grit or
damage.
Yeah.
You can go, okay, that's the gain control. I've absolutely no idea what these do. I know that one of the controls does four different things. So
concurrently, or like you
depending on what.
Depending on where
switch
the control is set.
Right, okay.
In there. So, no, but also in the knob itself. So,
right.
there's three micro switches.
Yeah.
Two of them are latched, and one of them has two settings, and one of them has three settings.
Yeah.
The middle one is non-latching.
What?
Exactly. It's a push up to go up, and then it springs back into the middle. So, it's like parameter up and down on a micro switch. But then one of the controls does four different things.
What, is it notched?
No, not at all.
It changes different parameters at the same time?
The light switch goes between two colours. So all the way around, I think it's like red. And then you turn it like a quarter of the way around and it's blue. Another quarter and it's red again. And then another quarter and it's blue again. Indicating that it's doing four different things depending on where you are on that dial.
Right, okay.
And it's four very different things, like... I just can't get my head around it. I need to sit down. Or what I need is Matt Knight to come around and go, look, this is how you use this.
So one of the shows I went to this week was to see a band called Alma, who Matt Knight interviewed for the boss thing that
yes.
we did it over at Kato Studios, which is up on our YouTube. And you should check out sort of the Alma video, because he uses like a double pedal board with tons and tons of effects.
Yeah, it's crazy, that video.
But he listens to the podcast, Pete, the guitarist in Alma, and he bought a Count to Five as well.
Did he?
Ordered one around the same time that you did, and actually received his very, a short
similar
time
ago.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. And he has reacted in a completely similar way. When I saw him the other night, he was like, oh yeah, I got my Count to Five. Absolutely no idea how it works.
Yeah. Straight out the box, if you don't read the instructions, it's basically unusable.
Yeah.
Because... there's no obvious things. So the switches are just listed as like M and D and E. I think it's M, D and E. And it's like, this makes no sense. And if you're on one of the modes and you hit the notch up, and it will like drop your loop by an octave, and then the loop will just stop. And it's like, I just don't know what's going on. So I need to spend some time sitting down and actually working out what this is about, because I really want to use it, and what I want to do is put it on the board after or maybe before the Ditto looper.
Right, yeah, so great idea.
Create, so you can loop,
create mad loops and then loop them.
Wow, you sound like a kid.
I know.
You sound like you're I want to create mad loops.
I want to create mad loops. And no, I sound like one of you guys who are just because normally I just plug the guitar in, put on a bit of reverb and like a bit of trem, and it sounds wicked.
Yeah.
But yeah, I actually want to do some stuff that we all talk about. But the Count to Five is just incomprehensible, and I don't know what I bought. But it kind of doesn't matter, because they go, if I were to sell it on eBay, they go for more in pounds than I paid. So, yeah, fine. I'm going to use it for a bit. If I don't get on with it, stick it on the bay. So, yeah, Count to Five. It's exciting. We should do a demo on it if
definitely.
We can ever work out how it works.
Yeah,
it or maybe if we don't work out how it works, maybe I'll just do a demo anyway.
Oh, even better.
Yeah.
Oh, can I talk about my gripe?
Oh, yes, you can. You can talk about your gripe, actually.
Okay, so
we will do some questions after this because we are news light. We've got a few things to talk about, like Joe's gripe. Don't switch off. It's not a medical gripe.
No.
It's with a piece of gear. And then we'll do some questions from the Facebook group. So tell us about your gripe.
Gripe.
I like this new segment.
Oh, yeah.
Every week we'll do a gripe.
A gripe.
Gripe.
Okay.
Gripe. That's it. I'll go for that.
Go again.
That one.
Okay. So this week's... No. Okay. So we need a little intro. So... And now on to this week's gripe.
Gripe.
Good.
Right, so this week's gripe is with Digitech.
Okay.
Is this going to get you the sack?
No.
What have the big D done to annoy you this week?
It's not something to annoy me. I really like Digitech. I think they've done some great pedals. And, I mean, the Whammy is you know, one of the greatest effects pedals you can buy and will sort of live forever in the history of absolutely brilliant effects. Their loopers, the Jamman Stereo, I think is very good.
Yeah.
I think it gives you a lot of options and takes up less room than, say, an RC300.
Yeah.
They're very good. I needed to get some loops, some samples onto a pedal that could be triggered. So WAV files onto a pedal that could be triggered.
Yeah.
And I was thinking, right, I need to get an RC3. I have an RC2, but the RC2 doesn't have a USB.
Yeah.
So there's no way of getting anything onto it. The RC3 does, and I was like, I could get that. But the Jamman Solo...
Wait, RC3? RC30?
No, RC3. RC3 has a USB
in.
Because all of the pedals, you can now go on that Boss Loop website. I can't remember...
Okay.
If you have an RC3, 30 or 300 or the one even, and you don't know about this, I can't remember the exact website link, but if you type Boss Loops into Google, I'm sure it will come up. They have an entire website dedicated to backing tracks that you can get on there, and people sharing different ways they're using the loopers. It's a really interesting community idea that Boss have come up with that for that. But anyway, back to Digitech.
Yes.
Who, instead of coming up with a useful community, have come up with a completely unusable software package.
So what were you trying to do?
So I need to get a WAV file from a computer onto the pedal so that I can trigger it.
Sure.
The Jamman Solo comes with not only a USB in, but also a micro SD.
Yes.
Great, really useful, and a lot cheaper than RC3. So I thought it was an obvious solution, as I only needed to do this one task. So I plugged it in via USB. The computer doesn't recognize it at all. And I was like, oh, there must be some sort of software.
Update the driver.
That I need to use. So yeah, so I found the software package. Got that. And if you then sort of you install that, reload, you know, replug in the pedal so that it can recognize the pedal on the software, and you can then move everything onto it. Only it doesn't ever recognize that there's a device there. So I then go onto Digitech's own forum for the Jamman, which I then read through hundreds of comments dating back to 2011. People going, I've downloaded the software, it doesn't recognise my Jamman Solo.
Is that how long ago that pedal came out?
And there has not been a single response from the company on their own forum, on their own page, to explain what's going on. And I mean hundreds of people saying, this does not work. This software does not work.
Firstly, the Digitech Jamman Solo coming out in 2011.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Heaven makes me feel unbelievably old.
That's, yeah.
Because I remember that as like the hot new thing. They're doing a single button looper. This is going to be amazing.
Well, because like, originally there was the Jam Man.
Yeah.
And then that was replaced by the Jam Man solo and the Jam Man stereo.
Yeah.
That's right, yeah.
Because they came out at the same time, I think.
Stereo's great. Does loads. But I don't know if this works. But certainly I couldn't get it to recognise a micro SD card. And I couldn't get it to import anything onto the software.
Was there anything on the forums about playing from a micro SD? Because that thing, that to me seems like the easiest way. I can kind of understand it not recognizing as a hard drive with your computer, because you're adding something else into the mixer. You're adding the computer in there. Like what drives absolutely. Have you got? You know, what version of your software have you got on your computer? Mm-hmm. I can kind of understand that. The micro SD. Should work.
Shouldn't it?
What about formatting? Have you checked like what format is expecting on the card?
Yes, yeah. Okay. It needs WAVs and it needs them to be in mono, no, despite the fact
the card itself, like how it's formatted. So FAT32.
No, I haven't checked.
That might be your issue.
It could be. This just seems like an incredibly complicated way of doing things.
Well, and considering, you know, you think of the audience for something like a Jam Man solo, it's probably a lot of the times I'd say it's like older guys that want to, like, you know, jam along some backing tracks or, you know, practice in their room. Like those sort of people, I would imagine, probably don't want to spend too much time messing around. And conversely, you know, someone who wants to go out and do some busking with taking something to loop on, probably not going to want to spend that much time faffing around with an SD card.
Especially when the alternative is you just get your RC30, you plug it in via USB and you drag and drop the files
completely
into the bank that you need it to be.
Needless to say, I'm ordering an RC3.
Right, okay.
But the other thing actually that I found with the Jam Man that I really wasn't sure about is they introduced backing. So they have a drum part that is also on there. It's always on. Always on.
Yeah, but you just turn it down,
the volume down.
Or you can, that's all, you can just turn the volume down.
Yeah.
So knock that control live whilst it's off, and you wouldn't know. And then you turn on your loop, and it's got over the top of it.
I'm into it.
Yeah.
Just to throw a little extra bit of weirdness into the polymath mix.
Yeah.
I mean, and I bet it's, the bit he hasn't got to the bit he's annoyed about. It's in 4/4.
Yeah.
Like that's the bit that annoys. You can't change it to like 7/12 or whatever.
13/17.
That's the best one.
Yeah, I love that. Love big hits in 13/17.
But there's gripe of the week anyway that I've just found surprisingly difficult to use a pedal that
should be really easy.
Yeah, seems to be base itself around being intuitive. Like the whole thing with the Jam Man is that you can plug two into each other and they'll be able to interact and with each other and things. Like everything about it seems like it was built for for, well, I kind of felt like for young players and for people who want to, they were really trying to harness like the Loop community with the relaunch of the Jam Man stuff, and it just seems like a bit of a shame that it's that it fell so short.
Yeah, I mean, it's a bit weird.
I don't mean to sound like a like I'm talking trash here, but have Digitech ever, I suppose with like the trio they did, but other than recently, have Digitech ever been the sort of company to go like, right, check out this new thing that's really cool, and the Whammy, I guess, or are they just playing catch up most of the time?
No, so recently, I think they've done some really good stuff.
I suppose
stuff.
You've got the Whammy, which is the obvious one.
They've got a new range of boutique pedals with things like the Polaris and the,
Well, that's what, you know, I'm thinking of the Trio and the Polaris and the Mosaic, the 12 string,
and reissuing the Overdrive preamp, which is a cool pedal, and the Phasor. Recently, Digitech and Dodd have been doing some really cool stuff.
The Dodd stuff is good, but yeah, maybe I'm just being
I know what you mean, though. For a long time, they've kind of just gone, we sell loads of Whammies, that'll
yeah,
do.
Absolutely. And, that's you fine. Know, it's like, oh, okay, cool, let's release another RP unit. And it'll be 50 quid cheaper than our competitor or whatever, you know?
Certainly, I think whilst we've all been growing up, Digitech have kind of been the I can't quite afford a Boss brand.
Yeah,
definitely. With things like, I mean, sometimes that's kind of hit and miss because we talk about how good the Bad Monkey is. I think I'd like play a Bad Monkey over an SD1 or something. I think that's a better pedal. But generally, it's
a Tube Screamer, really, more than it is.
Okay, well, so, yeah. Would you play it over
a Moore Green Mile?
Yes, yeah, probably. Exactly. But I wouldn't play a Hot Rod Distortion over, or a... what were they called? The X series. Do you remember?
Oh, God,
X,
yeah.
The DF or something?
And like, because they had those hardwire pedals as well, and they weren't very good. Because like, the Digitech hardwire looper. They had a hardwire looper, and that was really, really crap.
Like, I think that might still be available. Some of that hardwire stuff is definitely still available.
That was not a good pedal.
Were they the ones where you could suppress the pedals? Oh no, that was the Ibanez series, wasn't it? Where the suppressed pedals, the sound tank,
something else like that. Yeah. We talked about that a lot. Yeah. Good series of pedals. Anyway, so that was your gripe with Digitech.
That was my gripe.
Should we move on to some questions?
Yes, why not?
Questions.
Indeed, Paul says, set neck, bolt neck, or neck through? Pros and cons. Discuss. So, shall we take them in order that he said? Pros and cons of each. Because we can't... He's saying, which do you prefer? But...
what's better?
I guess it totally depends on the guitar. Like, we can't say... because I wouldn't want a Strat with a neck through.
Well, no,
that'd be dreadful.
But I also think we can probably attribute kind of standard features of the sort of guitar that you would give a set, or a three.
Let's talk about the pros and cons of a set neck first. Jay Cross, do you want to tackle this one?
Sure. So I guess the obvious one here would be something like a Les Paul.
Yep.
Or a Gibson style guitar. Les Pauls being the obvious one. So the pros and the cons, I think it kind of depends on how you're going about it, and also what level you're going for. Now, I would say that if you're not spending a huge amount on a guitar, you probably don't want to look for something with a set neck, because it's got a little bit more of an art form to it. It's something that you've got to have a human being looking at and like sort of queuing up and setting in properly.
Yeah, of the three, it's the hardest to achieve
in a
factory.
Do you think? What about a through neck?
Well, but I think a through neck's not, like, to achieve and it and not break. A through neck's expensive.
Yeah.
And it requires, I guess it requires more in the wood shop, but I think effectively gluing a neck to a body.
Yeah, but I mean, like, you're doing a lot of gluing with through necks as well.
Well, you're gluing on the wings of the instrument. Those are big chunks being sort
true,
of...
True, true.
You know.
Yeah, so I guess it depends on the neck tenon as well. The tenon being the part of the upper part of the neck, how much of that kind of goes into the body.
Yeah.
So on generally older Les Pauls and things that are trying to be more historically accurate, generally they'll have a longer neck tenon. So Yeah, it means that there's more of the neck past the fretboard going into a larger slot in the body.
But of course, that you sacrifice some access with a longer tenon, which is why they're sort of more abandoned on it.
Yes and no. Depends how you cut the heel, I guess. Sometimes it doesn't make a huge amount of difference. But and obviously, you know, more Les Paul, more modern Les Pauls, and generally cheaper Les Pauls tend to have a smaller, shorter neck tenon, which it can be. People say it affects the tone and obviously affects the durability of the guitar. Because
absolutely, it's why it's quite a common problem on Epiphones, on sort of a older Epiphone Les Paul. Certainly now that Epiphone have been making them for a while, it's not uncommon to see that being what finishes them.
Yes,
it's definitely, I think you are definitely looking at less, this is the least lifespan you will get out of a guitar in any price point.
Possibly I've got some thoughts on that with neck throughs.
Uh-huh.
Just in terms of aging and warping and things like that. Yeah. But yeah, yes, I think it's probably the second most expensive to do out of the lot. Mm-hmm. But it's common for a reason, you know. It's
not as common as
bolt on, but yeah, it's common.
The advantages are of course more to do with sustain and tone, I guess, by default. And I guess also this sits in the middle with that as well, if we think of neck through as being the most amount of contact that you can have between a neck and a body, and bolt on is the least.
So how about bolt ons? What kind of guitars would you expect to find them on, and why would you prefer a bolt on? Or what are the good things about a bolt on?
So,
well, Michael Bolton.
Yeah, Bolton Wanderers.
Yeah. That's not a good thing.
Idika Johnson, he was great.
Yeah, he's alright.
So obviously Fenders being all Fenders are bolt on. All Fenders?
No. Because you think of things like the custom FMT.
Okay.
The signature model by that fella.
Jim Adkins.
That's the one.
So there are a few. Those are through neck, I think, the FMTs.
The FMT
Jim Adkins is a glued neck.
I think so.
Something like that.
Yeah. Maybe it's the other way around.
Possibly.
I can't remember. Yeah. So bolt-on necks are exactly what they sound like. You've got three or four bolts at the back of the heel, which is the join between the neck and the body. The benefit to it being it's cheaper, it's quicker. One of the many reasons why an American built Fender style guitar will be a lot cheaper than why an American built Gibson style guitar, one of the reasons why they're so much cheaper is that you know, it's so quick and easy. You just drill four holes together and bish bash bosh, you're in. And you know, that isn't that's not happened by accident. Leo Fender he wanted the guitar to be modular. He wanted it to be quick, he wanted it to be easy, wanted it to be, you know, the whole point of it
replaceable.
Was it replaceable,
you break the neck, you could
absolutely
just put another one
and
on it.
You know, there's all those stories of people being like, oh, I really like the neck on your Strat, can we swap? And you know, it happening, which is you know, nowadays you just think, well, that's crazy, what are you doing? But you know, it was, that's what they were there for. They were modular, they were easy to do. One of the big things there obviously is if you drop your guitar and break the headstock off of it, you just have to buy a new neck, as opposed to if you drop your Les Paul, when you know, that's more or less, it's never going to be as,
it's never going to be the same again.
No, it's just the beginning, it's not the end.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Wait, that is true. It's the beginning of a whole new guitar.
Absolutely. But yeah, so that would be the main benefit. Tone, I'm not sure how much I buy into the fact that you would get a substantially different sound from the guitar. I think there's too many other factors.
I think you're 100%
wrong. 100%
wrong. So if you play a telly, with a bolt-on neck, and you play a telly with a through neck or a set neck, they sound so different. So different.
I agree that there are other things. Of course, like everything, if you want to take the two extremes, a telly and a Les Paul, then yes, everything about a Telecaster is designed around the opposite of what a Les Paul is. A Les Paul is looking for sort of sustain and low end, and a Tele's looking for twang, and it doesn't need any sustain, which is why. But I do think that it's still something that, you know, plays a big old part in it. But
You can look at something like I would look to something like an Ibanez Iceman, which is, you know, sort of leads us on to the next band there, where
through necks
and also, because they do through necks, bolt necks, and set necks, I think, for the Iceman.
I mean they have done bolt on necks in the past, but I don't think they do now.
They not do a cheap one?
No.
But you definitely get, because the ICT 300, I think, ICT 300, 500 and 700.
Okay.
The 700 is through neck, and I don't think they sound that much different to the cheaper ones. You know, they're better guitars, but there's a lot more going on there. I think the Iceman is a really good guitar to compare, because there's far fewer variables between the two. Yes, you're going to get a lot more sustain out of a through neck, which is one of the benefits to it. But you know, I'm not convinced that it's not down to the fact that generally bolt-on guitars are, you know, they're made of more brittle wood. They're made of wood that's more dense, less dense?
Less dense.
Less dense.
More porous.
Through neck guitars.
You said bolt-on.
Yeah, well, I mean bolt-on.
Yeah,
so
bolt-on necks are harder woods.
Yes.
So less porous.
Yeah.
Alder and
ash and basswood and
much tighter,
you know,
grain.
Absolutely. And so, you know, I think those I think the actual construction of the body would make a far bigger difference than how the neck's been put together. I'm really not convinced.
We'll have to agree to disagree
okay,
on that,
yeah,
one,
yeah.
I think actually if you played for example a mahogany body Tele,
okay,
with a bolt on neck and an ash Tele with a bolt on neck,
yeah,
the difference will be much less than if you played an ash body Tele with a bolt on versus an ash body Tele with a glued neck. I mean, you couldn't really do that, but
yeah well that's my point, is that I really don't think that join is the deciding factor. I think that, you know, the fact that you would glue a mahogany body as opposed to drilling it, you know, you wouldn't drill a mahogany body because it's the wood grain is too open. It's likely not to be
but that's secure enough. That's more about the wood making the difference.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's 100% my point, is I think that the wood is what makes that difference, rather than how, you know, the fact that there's a little bit extra wood there that's maybe vibrating a bit more.
So Joe Branton, we haven't really covered through necks.
No.
So what, coming from the bass world, through necks obviously are quite a bit more common.
Yeah.
So what,
it doesn't,
how
make
are through
them,
necks made, it and yeah, what are the pros and cons?
Okay, so a through neck is essentially the neck and the centerpiece of the body being all part of the same thing.
Yes.
So what you would do is build a neck with a square centerpiece, and then you add on the wings of the,
not
of
square,
the, well, sorry, that, long,
was,
sort of rectangular,
yeah, yeah, yeah,
sort of
cuboid.
Cuboid is what,
well,
I meant,
just imagine,
yeah,
if you followed the kind of thickness of a guitar neck,
yeah,
all the way through to the end of the body.
Exactly. And then you shove a couple of wings onto, yep, either end, which are normally glued.
A Thunderbird is probably the most well-known, in terms of like looking at it, a Thunderbird would be an example of that,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's worth mentioning that when they do the through necks, they're often made of multiple layers for strength, and also for looks. So if you see, like, classic example, yes, Thunderbird, or like one of the original BC Rich Mockingbirds, which will have like probably 7 or 9 different kind of sandwiched layers,
yeah,
making
the
up the centre part
the
of the body.
Epiphone Thunderbird Pros at the moment have,
yep,
that. They have,
do
like
they?
The, yeah, and they'd normally use something like they'd do like a walnut maple kind of every other sort of thing. And yeah,
yes,
they're normally like 5 or 7 layer laminates. So yeah, so the Thunderbird is sort of your obvious one, and kind of your only good one, because it's just something that's so Through Next was something that was so kind of galvanized in the 80s, and it's so it's become such a part of that. I don't think there are, for me, Through Next are the thing I would come into contact the least with, because no one who makes good instruments uses Through Next. Unfortunately, because it's the last one to the party, no classic vintage guitars are made with a through neck, which means it's mostly newer stuff.
I think you're going to upset a lot of bass players that play Alembics and Ibanez musicians.
They don't count.
And people that play those modern Ibanez, because Ibanez use through necks a lot on their kind of high-end SRs and things like that.
It's there on the SRs above the sort of 500 series and the fretless models as well. And I guess you see it on the PRS stuff as well, the Kestrel and the Kingfisher basses as well. So yeah, and I guess PRS for guitars would also use
glued. So what would you say are the benefits of using through necks?
So again, I guess it's just the top tier of the sort of the sustain argument. So it's the most amount of contact you can have for the neck into the body. So it running to sort of where the pickups are going to be. So it is going to, have the most sustain and the truest tone in that sense.
Yeah,
that's about it.
They also, I think, they look super cool on the right bass, or pretty much on the right bass on some guitars. I think those BC Rich like Mockingbirds and stuff from the 70s, and like the Ibanez musicians and stuff, which I think are a Swamp Ash and Walnut sandwich.
Really?
Like. Yes, like the wings are walnut, and then down the middle they've got like Swamp Ash stripes. Yeah. Look awesome.
I'm gonna rep the Iceman again.
Yeah,
the Iceman is, there is nothing uncool about the Iceman.
You don't usually see the joins on those, like, so usually finish them in like a black or something.
Yeah.
But I think through necks are cool, and I think they should come back.
Maybe they will.
Okay.
Maybe they will. No, it's, I mean, it obviously wins kind of the sort of tone sustain thing. I'm just not necessarily convinced it was anything that ever needed to be won. I mean, one of the big advantages of it as well is, of course, like Fender and Gibson really struggle to make anything resembling a contoured heel. Well, Gibson just can't do it, but Fender really try.
What about the Les Paul Access?
Yeah, but that's not a glue on neck, is it? I thought that was through.
No.
Actually,
I'm pretty sure it's through.
Maybe they are through neck.
They are. Yeah, they are definitely through. 100%.
I don't know.
100%.
I actually don't know. We can look that up.
It's certainly a struggle if for a glued neck to do a sort of contoured heel. Fender sort of do their best, but there's always going to be, you know, sort of a bit of a mess down there between where the neck's joining the body. So for sort of higher access and everything, which is obviously something that guitarists are going to care about more than bass players, I think, it's cool.
Yes, I think through necks should make a comeback. We've got a few more minutes. Let's do one more question. Okay, this is fairly open-ended. And Trevor says,
Trevor,
what's your favourite amp?
Trevor!
That is fairly open. What's your favourite amp and why? Jay Cross.
What's my favourite amp and why?
This is difficult.
It is difficult.
Why is it difficult? It's basement.
I sold it. I told you that.
Yeah. It's not. It doesn't have to be something you've owned.
No,
what's your favourite amp?
What's my favourite amp? Given that... Oh, man. I don't know.
Should I come back to you?
Come back to me.
Joe Branton.
Could it be a bass amp?
Can I
have
a course?
Can I have both?
Pick one. Pick one of each.
Okay, well, for bass, even though it's something that I will never own and probably wouldn't buy... absolutely the best sounding amp I've ever heard is the Ampeg B15.
Okay.
So Ampeg released like a, is it 15 watts? I assume it's 15 watts.
Yes, or valve.
So it was part of their original Portaflex series.
It was the Portaflex, I believe.
Yeah. Which was great. If you've never seen one, it was kind of, I assume it was designed for studio use. As it's obviously only 15 watts, but of course everything was quieter when it was being built, which would have been what, early 70s?
Late 60s.
Right.
Yeah. Mid to late 60s.
And the whole concept with this range is that they are flip top, so the head itself packs down into the cabinet, which is a single 15-inch speaker. and you can unclip the top of the cabinet, flip it round, and you've got the head with the input jack access there and all of the valves on display exposed in front of you. And it is just one of the coolest vintage sounding bass heads ever, bass amps ever made, and just is on countless records. I actually was able to get one for our last recording, but unfortunately they're all so old and rickety now.
Did it not survive?
No, it was it was just, there were some screws loose in the cabinet and they were just, you could hear them when I was playing. And
fine for live, recording. Not good enough for recording.
No, exactly. So,
how about the guitar amp?
Which leads me on to my favourite guitar amp, which is actually the bass amp I recorded on instead.
Okay.
Which is a Fender Bassman 135.
That I just sold.
Yeah, the head going through, they released a 215 cab in that series to go with it. And
silver
is,
face cab, 215, beautiful.
Absolutely straight
beautiful.
Up. The just the most sort of velvety, soupy, vintage. It was just sounded like everything Led Zeppelin.
Yeah.
And it absolutely no ridiculous presence and top end. You could have maxed the treble out of it and not been able to hear any sort of string noise. You know, it was so subby and woolly sounding. But, you know, that's partially to do with the way cabs were made back then, when they were, same with the B-15, when they were lining the inside of cabs with cotton wool, because treble was something to be avoided back then.
Yeah. Now that's what you want.
Yeah, well,
bit of top end.
Some people, what you
bit
want.
Of top end. Yeah, it's very nice.
But yeah, so I'll go for those two as absolutely perfect examples of vintage amps.
J. Cross.
I think if I'm choosing a bass amp, the single best bass sound that I ever heard.
Mark
was...
Bass, Little Mark.
No.
Please don't. Look, I've set such a good bar.
The single best bass sound that I ever heard was this guy that I used to play in a band with. Before I was playing in a band with him, I went to watch his band play. And he had a... I can't remember the exact model, but I
How
think...
How could it be your favourite amp?
I think it was... Well, I just don't know the exact model.
Oh, right,
I think
okay.
It was a... it was a Sun. I think the 300T, which right. is like the original style, like the 60s one. Obviously not a 60s one, but 60s style one. And they... I was doing some reading on them fairly recently, actually. And I hadn't realised that Sun, it comes from... Their name was Sunholt, I think. And they were in the Kingsmen, who did that song Louie Louie.
Ah, okay.
And they, after like Louie Louie was such a big hit, they started touring and stuff. And the bass amp just, they was nothing loud enough.
Right.
So they went, okay, I guess we'll build it something that's loud enough. And that's where it came from.
Nice.
Which is really cool. And I didn't know that. But that's like... Absolutely, that's the favourite bass sound I've ever heard was like
great sound,
one of those through an 8x10 just like turned up, absolutely amazing. Guitar amp, I think probably, I really want to say Fender, but I think probably an AC30.
Nice.
I think it's probably my favourite amp, a Vox AC30, a hand wired Vox AC30, a hand wired Vox AC30. With those Celestian blue speakers.
Beautiful.
A hand what? No, I'm done.
Okay, good. I'm going to go for... the guitar amp is really difficult because I don't really like a lot of guitar amps.
Yeah. You own a Hughes and Kettner.
Yeah, exactly.
That's
and I
why
don't,
he doesn't like
it. And I don't really like it. But it's there and it's useful. It's functional, but I don't really like it. It's okay. And when you put pedals in front of it, it sounds great. But the amp itself doesn't sound that good. It sounds... Okay, so I would say my favourite guitar amp is actually one that I've owned. I'm going to go with Marshall JCM 2000 DSL 50.
Really?
Yeah. I think they are a great sounding
wow.
Marshall.
Okay. And we've had this question before and he's answered that.
If you want a go-to Marshall that's probably not going to break, is not super heavy, will give you a great range of clean... and crunch tones. I don't really like the drive channels on it, but the crunch channel, the clean channel, basically if you push the crunch button, turn the gain all the way up, is my favourite punk rock Marshall sound. It just sounds awesome. I think for my money it's as good as any 800. I really like the DSL-50. DSL-50 is a diamond in the rough of fairly modern Marshall amps. I think it's awesome. Bass amps, I don't know.
It's tough to do it without...
Do you know what I really miss? And you're going to say this is an awful amp, but I used to own a Ampeg B2, which was a 1x15 solid state combo.
Why do you have to cheapen everything?
I just really miss that amp.
Get them. You can get them for about 50 quid on eBay,
They sound great. They look like a washing machine because they're like silver with a big 15-inch driver in the middle. Like 12 band graphic EQ or something, or seven band graphic EQ. Completely. They shouldn't work. And by the time mine was done, the extension cab that I got for it didn't work, so we just threw that in a skip. And the sliders had all been smashed off the graphic EQ, and a couple of the knobs didn't work, but it still sounded awesome, and I miss that amp. That amp was wicked. Really, really cool amp. Those are my two. They're not my favourite amps of all time, of course, they're good amps that I have owned and miss both of them quite a lot.
Right.
So, of course, the best bass amp of all time is the Mark Bass Little Mark One.
There it is. Always cheapening everything.
So good.
They are good.
Oh, anyway, we are well over time, so we should wrap this up. Thanks for listening this week. We're going to go and do another 30 minutes over on Patreon, patreon.com/guitar nerds, where from as little as $5 a month, you get an extra half an hour of Guitar Nerds content every week. For $10 a month, you become one of our executive Patreon backers, like these people have.
Andrew Marco, Brad Page, Marco Cross, Marco Rice, Rob Piercy, JD Shorto, David Tarola, Andy McKenzie, Eric Saru, Paul Corrugan, Jack Godfroth, Jack Conrad, Will Clure, Scott O'Brien, Matt Kwan, Fletch Fluchaka, Phil Tomset, Laurie Anstis, Moog Gravity, Colin Andersanderol.
Good. So thanks for those people for contributing. What you get for your $10 a month is to get read out in a stupid voice, apparently.
Yes, that's correct.
It's all good.
Well done, all of you.
You can also, from probably next week onwards, you can join us on Tuesday nights when we're going to do this live on Amply.
Oh, my God.
I know.
The amount of stuff that I say that you cut.
I know. Totally.
You're not going to be able to cut any of it.
What's going
to
happen when there's football on?
We just have to work through it. Ampli.fi/guitar nerds. That's A-M-P-L-I.
It's the start of the end.
L-I dot F-I.
S-L-N-K.
Amplifying? I don't know what that means. It's ampli.fi/guitar nerds. You can join us there, I think, every Tuesday night where we're going to do this live.
Tuesday night.
Or at least until Joe says something live that gets us kicked off and
cut off air. So, if you want more updates on that, facebook.com/groups/guitar nerds forum and Twitter, where we're at Guitar Nerds, and same on Instagram, where we've been doing a lot more stuff recently.
Yes.
Which is good. And where else can you find us? youtube.com/guitar nerds videos, where I think the archived live streams are going to live for now. So, if you miss it, you can catch up on there.
Instagram's actually becoming a bit of a competition for us at the moment.
Because
for the first time ever, all four of us have access to the Instagram and we're all posting at different times of the day.
Who can do the most likes?
Who can get the most likes?
I'm winning.
It's kind of like live streaming each of our lives all together on Instagram. So definitely follow us there, except for Mark, who just lifts his pictures off of the internet. The rest of us are all taking pictures of our actual stuff.
That's because most of my life is setting up things like the live stream. It would be really boring. It would be a picture of either emails or loads of wires. I might actually put that photo up, just this setup that we've got going on right now. And working it out. That's my life at the moment.
It's now or never.
Good life.
Indeed.
And now I'm going to live forever.
Good.
Can you rhyme never with ever?
Yeah, you can. Follow us all individually at @Mark_random, @JAYBN1, @Joseph_900, and also follow Matt, who's not here this evening.
Matt Nitro.
@Matt_Nightsy. That's Knight with S-I-E on the end.
S-I-E.
There we go. Bit of a flashback for you.
It was good. I liked it.
Thanks so much for listening. We'll see you next week.
Thanks, gang.
Farewell.
Cheers. Bye-bye.
Goodbye. You shall now go forth into the world. Where you shall go, we don't know. You might be dropping the kids off to school. You might have come home from a sweaty day in the office. We don't know. We don't know you, but you know us.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.